When you golf in Missouri, the courses are so close, you'll spend more time on the fairway than the freeway. Reserve a tee time at the Regal Osage National, designed by the king himself, Arnold Palmer. Take a cart ride on the wild side in the breathtaking surrounds of Payne's Valley, designed by Tiger Woods. And after the back nine, there's still world-class dining and distilleries, shops and spas, museums and more. Find your new golf MO in Missouri. Start planning your golf getaway at visitmo.com.
Time is precious, and so are our pets. So time with our pets is extra precious. That's why we started Dutch. Dutch provides 24/7 access to licensed vets with unlimited virtual visits and follow-ups for up to five pets. You can message a vet at any time and schedule a video visit the same day. Our vets can even prescribe medication for many ailments, and shipping is always free. With Dutch, you'll get more time with your pets and year-round peace of mind when it comes to their vet care.
Welcome back to another episode of Friends from Work, a podcast about all things in the Marvel Cinematic Universe, hosted by me, Robbie, and by my good, longtime friend, Kyle. Now, Kyle, I'm sitting here with my Daredevil mug full of coffee, you know, just in case. I'm out here, fingers crossed, hoping for good DD vibes in the Spider-Man No Way Home movie that we've been talking all about. How are you doing?
A very appropriate mug for you. By the way, are you okay? You don't sound too good.
I'm clinging to life over here.
Oh no!
I came down with some brutal cold. Don't worry, it's not COVID. Friends from work
is
we're thoroughly safe over here. But I apologize for my voice going down a couple octaves today.
I'm doing good. Honestly, I'm still recovering from last week's marathon. That's probably what put you into your cold state.
True. Although, I mean, the craziest thing about this trailer, like we talked about, and we're not going to talk about it much today, is that we talked about it for so long. It's, what, 2.5 minutes? And we finished recording, and I feel like there's still a ton of things I could bring up if we wanted to delve into it again. And I feel like that's the sign of them having done such a good job in the way that they put that thing together.
No doubt. There will be a lot of time, though. We'll get there. I wanted to bring up something random that you and I had talked about when we were together after Shang-Chi. You and I watched Shang-Chi, I think it was like 7 o'clock, and we were out of the theater by 9:30. And I remember I was like, let's go live on Instagram 9:30. And we ended up not going live because we couldn't find a spot. And we went back to our hotel, if you remember this, and we're like, let's just talk a little bit about the movie and we'll figure out if we're going to go live. It ended up dovetailing into 3 hours, I think, in the hotel lobby, knowing that I had to get up at 5 a.m. for my flight. We ended up staying up till midnight, mostly talking about Infinity War and Endgame. I think we did work in some Shang-Chi talk, no doubt. But something about that, like us being together, just got us spiraling into a few Endgame things. And I wanted to share a tiny bit of that. The consensus between Robbie and I was, we are still so lucky that we have those movies. So I want to add this. I think for any Marvel fan, it should be required viewing about once every 2 months to go look up the audience reactions to those movies and watch that 8 minutes on YouTube. If you haven't done it in a while, please go do it. It adds so much joy to your heart. I watched it last night. Oh my goodness, Robbie. It confirms everything we always felt about those two movies.
Was it the Endgame scene?
You can watch audience reactions to both Infinity War and Endgame, and they've put together like 15-minute clips where it's a lot of the famous scenes. So you can watch just the laughter from some of the jokes. But honestly, one I hadn't seen in a while was I got to watch an audience reaction to the final scenes of Infinity War and to hear everyone going, no, 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 in the background. And then when it shows Thanos and it cuts the screen to black, the reaction is exactly how I remember. People are literally like murmuring, you know, like, what? No. What? Right. It's like, it brings so much joy to my heart. Please go look it up.
Man, it is funny because that's not to minimize Shang-Chi at all. I think in some ways it speaks to how much we enjoyed Shang-Chi and how much we felt it was kicking off really a new era, in that it kind of had us reflecting and going back into what we consider to be the culmination of the previous era in a way that we haven't as much, even with all of the new content we've already gotten this year.
Right. Well, and we'll get a full review of Shang-Chi on Thursday. So I still want to keep this episode spoiler-free, but obviously some of the later scenes in that movie inspired some of that talk, you know?
For sure.
One of the things that I feel like we stumbled upon that I loved so much was, you know how our favorite moment in Endgame, or one of them, is when Cap tightens the shield and he gets up against Thanos, even though it's the entire army and him by himself. And obviously Portals is like the most chill-inducing moment ever. But right before, that's a cool moment because Cap is still going to do it. Like, think about everything that led to his decision to get up and still fight Thanos there, like everything he had gone through. And I love that. But I was pointing out to you, one of my favorite moments in a similar way in Infinity War is the fight between Tony Stark and Thanos and the line of "all that for a drop of blood." Yeah. And watching that reactions reminds me of that, because the people are going crazy when Tony's like beating up Thanos, and that's what you want. And just think, Robbie, about how much he's gone through for that moment. It's not just the technology that he prepared for that fight, you know, the last year. It's his entire life since Avengers, where he knew this could happen and he didn't want this exact moment to happen. And when he finally put his whole life's work into all this tech to fight this thing that he knew was coming, he does everything he has, and all it does is cause one drop of blood. Are you kidding me? And I think that feeling of defeat for me, in a similar way, the way Cap is facing all odds, that's Tony's moment right there, you know? And that's why I think that that knife through his chest is so stunning in that movie. Oh, guys, go watch it again. I'm telling you. I'm telling you.
Well, I feel like we were talking about this in another context the other day, and I'm trying to remember, we were talking about Suicide Squad, which we'll have to get to later, but talking about how there is sometimes this feeling of the stakes not being there in these movies. Like, for instance, in the first Iron Man movie, Tony's not going to die. Like, it's just not going to happen. They're not going to introduce a new character and then kill him off. Same thing with, like, Ant-Man or Doctor Strange, or even, like,
unless like it's Age a what-if episode, apparently.
Jeez, I know, right? But I think that there was something really incredible about going into Infinity War. I remember feeling as though one major character would probably die off. And obviously, in some ways, a lot of them did. Vision actually did. But I remember thinking, like, okay, we might lose, like, Cap or Tony or Thor here. And in a way, it kind of sets you up to where any of those could be the ones, because they all kind of, especially Thor and Tony, kind of have these long journeys that feel like they could be leading up to them kind of sacrificing themselves in some way similar to what Tony did in Avengers and then, you know, obviously ends up doing in Endgame. I say all that just to say, in that moment, whenever Thanos stabs Tony, you and I were talking about how, like, you legitimately think that Tony, that could be it. Like, that could be where Tony Stark dies. And I still feel that a little bit every time I watch it. And that's the mark of, you're totally right, of that scene being so great and hitting so hard. Because it's not, you know, it's not one of these where it feels like an empty gesture. It, like, Oh man, it's like everything he's been working towards. Yeah, since that scene in Avengers, and then he's just getting, swatted down in the most brutal way.
That's the kicker, is that for stakes to exist, you don't have to kill everybody. In hindsight, right, not that many people died, but it's just, I have to feel it. And I did feel like it was possible at any moment. That's what I remember. I remember being like, it could be anyone that they decide to end their story right here. Cause you know, they've been involved for 11 years. So this is totally possible. And yeah, dude, it's so good.
What I do wonder about Infinity War, and this is why I saw someone the other day saying that they almost wish that Marvel wouldn't continue the Black Panther franchise in light of Chadwick's passing. And I get that sentiment. I totally get the sentiment, and I can even get there myself. But I do feel like that's such a rich mythology that they've just scratched the surface of. And there's so many questions that we would have in terms of how they would deal with the ramifications of what's happened in the MCU, you know, much less figuring out what it would look like if T'Challa weren't around. But one question that I had thinking about Infinity War is I wonder to what degree the Wakandan population, or at least like the military, was kind of decimated by the battle in Wakanda in Infinity War. Because, you know
but
what I mean?
Also, like, in Endgame, because they come back in Endgame, surely they took some losses there.
Oh, that's also true. Yeah. I mean, between the two, because Tony is supposed to have only brought back the ones that were snapped. And when I'm thinking of actual deaths resulting from Thanos, I feel like Wakanda probably bore the brunt of that.
Yeah, two times.
Yeah. And I bring that up because that's a really interesting part of that. Again, this is like becoming the Thor 2 for me of comics, but that Jonathan Hickman Avengers run, but also the Ta-Nehisi Coates Black Panther run that follows it up, is sort of the nation of Wakanda dealing with the fact that it had been kind of isolationist forever and had never had to deal with a lot of these things.
Right.
And then as soon as it opens itself up, it's now bearing the brunt of everything. Like it feels like it's taking the weight of all of these different invasions and global catastrophes. And I wonder if that's going to be part of the posture of the next film we're getting.
Oh no. Think about how rough of a run they've had since they decided to open their borders. It has not gone well in the first few years. Not at all. Wow. I just think it's required viewing. The audience reactions and watching those movies every once in a while, just to remind yourself how lucky you are that you got to witness that live. Okay, we have the wildest episode of What If to get into. Oh my gosh. And we got a chance to talk with Laura Karpman, who is the composer of What If. And I felt like she killed this Doctor Strange episode. It was very beautiful, the music. And so,
yeah.
Hopefully you'll enjoy hearing from her about that. But first, we got to dive into this What If episode. I have got my Ranger Station candle going, though. Rob, do you?
I do. I'm looking at it right now.
Guys, Ranger Station has been such an honor to partner with. I want you to go check out their candles, please. They hand pour all of their candles into whiskey glasses to be used as such once the candle is gone. So there's no more throwing away your empty candles, no more grossness with the leftover candles. Instead, you'll have your new favorite rocks glass. Each candle comes with matches and a cocktail recipe that does perfectly match the candle scent. Robbie, have you gotten to the cocktail recipe yet, or you're not finished with the candle?
See, I have actually. Well, that's what I was going to say. Yeah, I finally, last time we were recording, I was burning a Ranger Station candle, which finally burned down. And I went through the process that is outlined on the Ranger Station website. If you go to the website and click the care page, you see how you transition the candle to a whiskey glass, which I did and had the chance to try with the cocktail recipe provided. And, you know, unsurprisingly.
Success.
Yeah, I'm a happy customer.
Wow. They are a phenomenal company, and everything they do is clean, safe, and sustainable. So you know you're supporting a good company. They use soy-based wax, and they use clean and safe oils. Scent is the first thing noticed and the last thing remembered, and isn't our life all about remembering our experiences? So go to rangerstation.com and use the promo code FRIENDSFROMWORK to save 15% off your first order. It makes an excellent gift for somebody else, but also an excellent gift for yourself. So do yourself a favor and go to rangerstation.com and use the promo code FRIENDSFROMWORK. Okay, and lastly, Robbie, before we dive into what if, I have a couple of housekeeping things here. Obviously, all the usual, okay? Follow us on social media at the FFW Podcast. Mm-hmm. Check out our website, theffwpodcast.com. Rate, review, and subscribe to our podcast. And you can join our Slack by going to the website, theffwpodcast.com, which we are constantly updating. It's our Squarespace website, which we'll tell you about in a second, and we love so much. So check those things out. But also, I just need to remind people that we are currently doing the Cinemark giveaway still. You still have until Thursday to get your entries in. Here's what you have to do, as just a reminder. If you take a screenshot of this episode or last week's episode that you're listening to it, and you tag at the FFW Podcast, and you tag at Cinemark, and you follow Cinemark and Friends From Work, whatever social media platform you're using, you will be entered in to win one of four overall total $50 gift cards that we have. So we're going to have four separate winners. So you're going to have decent odds at winning this thing. So again, follow Cinemark and Friends From Work and tag us at the FFW Podcast and at Cinemark to be entered in to that contest. We will be choosing the winner on Thursday. Can't wait to do that. And as you've probably already noticed, Shang-Chi is dope. So go again. Go to another movie. Save it for the Eternals. There's a lot of options. So make sure you are near a Cinemark to enter, but we'll choose it on Thursday. Okay, Robbie, what if episode 4? What a unique deal. Are you kidding me? I watched this a little early. We got early access again, like we said, which is super strange. I watched it a little early, and all I did was I texted you and said, oh my goodness, wow, 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 wow. And then I went to bed. That was it.
It's true, which made me immediately watch it and text you back. And at that point, I think you were already asleep. And then we haven't talked about it until now, which is always kind of fun.
This is truly fresh, yes.
So because we haven't talked about it, I don't know exactly where you sit. And I know I'm maybe sounding a little bit like a broken record here, but here it is, episode 4 of the show, and it's my new favorite episode of the entire series, I think.
Oh, it is.
Yeah, I mean, I thought this one was fantastic. And like to me, this felt like a next tier up. Like it's sort of different. It's always going to be hard with What If because each episode is sort of doing its own genre. So it's the same way that we've talked about it being kind of difficult to compare like Spider-Man Homecoming to WandaVision, you know, like where, how do you even use similar metrics for those things?
Right.
But I mean, this one felt to me like almost a piece of like prestige television in how dark it goes and how emotional it is. The Laura Cartman score did a ton for that. I totally agree with you there. I think this is, we talked a lot about some of the fun stuff she did, particularly in the second episode with the Guardians Black Panther collaboration. But this, I think, is the first time her score has really kind of knocked me over in terms of the, mm-hmm. the layers it's adding to the viewing experience.
Beautiful.
Yeah.
Sad. Breathtaking.
Yes. Yeah, I mean, mournful, but also, I mean, and it's perfect, right, for the tone of the episode, but also, like, it was so interesting to get a solo Stephen Strange story, pardon my alliteration, again, after, you know, 5 years, where it's like we had the origin, and then he's kind of just been a part of these ensemble films. And obviously, this is not going to be canon, but in some ways, I mean, like, obviously, we've got to talk about the No Way Home not implications, but at least parallels in terms of the conversations we were having about the trailer and about his, you know, arrogance and his, you know, irresponsibility. And I
okay,
hold on.
Hold on. I think you're starting, personally, way too small scale. To compare the quality of the other three, okay, that's okay, we can do that, but we need to zoom out a little bit because, in my opinion, this episode was a what-if game changer because whether you noticed it or not, we got some pretty massive answers to things. Like, so for example, remember last week we were discussing, are the episodes at all tied together or are they separate stories? Well, to me, this answers the question, they are truly fully separate stories.
Right.
Because
right.
he shrinks all of reality and ends in that way. So yeah. I don't think anything
yeah, I
else
mean,
would
that,
be left if they were tied together.
Like, I think we're to believe that that reality no longer exists, right?
Which is crazy, right? But this is also the first time that we saw a character get powerful enough, I guess, that he could interact with the Watcher. We have
right.
not seen the Watcher interact at all.
That
now, he
was
didn't,
huge.
Quote unquote, interfere. And that makes me believe, is there more of that coming up then?
Uh-huh.
Is this going to ultimately end with the Watcher interfering when he wasn't supposed to?
I mean, it's happened something. In the comics. You know, it has to be said. That's always been... It's so fun to have the Watcher showing up more as a character in general. I think one thing I meant to talk about in episode 3, but didn't, is there are a couple of really cool stills of the Watcher kind of in the background as Fury and Widow are traveling around that I think some of our folks on Slack pointed out that I thought were just really cool visuals. And folks had wondered if that was sort of a transition into the Watcher being more and more in the story.
Right.
And I think in light of this episode, yeah, it seems like that was kind of setting us up for him being a part of it, even to the point where he's communicating with this version of Doctor Strange.
But one last game changer thing on a helicopter 6,000 foot view level. This is officially really confirming that they are able to fully dive into different genres in a way that other movies have not been able to do yet. And I understand
right.
why. If they're isolated stories, it frees you up to do whatever you want, like kill Tony Stark or ultimately trap Doctor Strange forever. But this allowed them to do a full-blown tragedy / horror, like borderline horror thing that we just haven't seen before. I watched it with my in-laws, and they were all like, oh my gosh, that's how it ends. There was nothing really redeeming about that. And I thought to myself,
right.
that's kind of what I love. It's, I loved that. And I know, listen, some people out there are going to think, I know for a fact, this is not going to be everybody's scene. I know that. Some people are going to hate this. And then I also think that some people are going to be having a hard time separating that this is an alternate thing. They're going to be like, that's not how Strange is. That's not what he would do. But what I love about this show is that it allows them to explore those isolated stories in such a way that you can even end Doctor Strange entirely.
Right.
And
right.
it's almost more of a parable, kind of. You know what I mean? Like, it's a tale,
yeah.
a cautionary tale of what not to do when working through grief, basically. I love that this show now is able to do that like we've never gotten before, you know?
Yeah. No, it feels like and this is a high compliment for me, but it feels like a classic episode of The Twilight Zone.
Yes.
Where like it really like you really feel like it's a full kind of complete story. You're getting to know this character, and then yeah, it's sort of the cautionary tale, monkey's paw aspect of the whole thing.
And I think that's why I'm personally fired up right now is because I wanted this show to be more like this and less
yeah.
tied in. And I know some people out
yeah.
there
yeah.
probably are mad and want it to be more tied in. But I just kind of wonder if the same people that were hoping that this would be super tied in to the main MCU reality, if they're a little bit disappointed that this episode seems to hint that that's not the case, But that's why I'm fired up, because that's actually what I wanted. I wanted this to be standalone, fun stories that we explore, but I didn't want this show to have to feel the weight of carrying long-running MCU ramifications.
Agreed, agreed. I think I would go further and say that I, and this is just purely preference, I know some people online have, like, loved episode 1 and 2, especially because of how fun they were. Like, they both just leaned into the kind of, like, the first one's really kind of action, adventure, swashbuckling. And then the second one is just so, well, yeah, you still have kind of the heist thing, but then all the fun stuff we talked about with T'Challa and the Guardians narrative. But I think I've always been really excited to see the opposite side of that and to see them go dark in a way that they couldn't necessarily in the full MCU.
And haven't.
And I think that's why I liked last episode so much. And then that's why I think in some ways I like this one even more. Not because I'm not a person that says go dark for the sake of being dark, because I think that can be cheap. And there are movies that I can cite as examples of that, for me at least. But this...
Yep, I can vouch that he's telling the truth there.
You know, like, again, I think this was just legitimately emotional for me to watch. Like, I thought it was just really, really masterfully done.
And that's where I want to add, I loved episode 2, and I liked episode 1. But you and I are always going to err on the side of boldness and big swings. How many times have we said that in this podcast?
Right.
And I love that it seems like you and I are kind of aligned with Kevin or Marvel, right? It seems like they want to do the same thing that we're wanting.
Because
if you just paused after episode 2 and said, okay, we're now going to get 7 more episodes that kind of fit the same structure, I think that they could do that.
Right.
And people would watch it and it would be fine. But that's not what you and I want, you know? Like, it would be tempting just to fall into that structure each time. You know, like,
right,
let's give an alternate version of what happened to Tony Stark. Instead of Tony, it was actually Happy. And
right,
Happy saved his life. And I'm not making fun of that. I'm just saying you could do that.
Right.
And it wouldn't be as fulfilling, in my opinion, as taking the chance to explore tragedy and horror. Like,
right,
we don't get that opportunity very often. And because of what we actually were talking about with Infinity War, wow, what a tie-in. We talked about how we want there to be stakes, right? Well, part of the problem is what you're saying about Iron Man 1 is true. When Shang-Chi comes out, I think all of us kind of know he's not going to die in the first 10 minutes of that movie,
right?
Like, it's just not going to work like that. But I love that with What If, because they're isolated stories, and I'm beating a dead horse here, because it doesn't feel the weight to have to tie in longer running stories, you can get an episode where Doctor Strange does ultimately die within 30 minutes.
Right.
And that's fun.
Yeah, because it's
not
build.
Fun that he's dead, but it's awesome.
Yeah, no, I mean, I think it can build. It sort of is the best of both worlds, because we have the character development that we can sort of pull in because of the way the show is structured, where it says, okay, like, other than this, like, up till this point, the story is pretty much what you've seen. So you don't feel like you're being introduced to a whole new character, even though in some ways he is a different version. But then, yeah, everything that moves from that point is so different. And I think that's one of the interesting things about this show, and where I think people might debate this or I guess find this to be more controversial. Personally, I like to think of what we saw in this episode as sort of being within the potential of our Doctor Strange, even. Like, and I'm not going to take that too far and say that this has any sort of implications for our Doctor Strange's storyline. But what I was saying earlier about the No Way Home thing and everyone talking about whether that's out of character or not, and again, it's hard to really speak to that without just being straight in the mode of conjecture. But I do think this shows us, okay, we saw Doctor Strange in his movie going to such lengths to repair his hands and the way that the kind of ego was bound up in that, but also this real sense of loss and like a search for meaning apart from what he had thought was his purpose. And I think here, to show how that would be different if the loss was not just so tied to his ego, but also tied to an actual love for a person. And much, you know, like how much further would that man now go if the stakes have been raised? Again, to kind of talk about stakes. And I think that does say something for his character, you know?
That's the thing, is as wild and far out as this story was, at its core, wasn't it kind of believable?
Right.
Like, we did see him go so far just over the loss of his career. So you're right. I don't think it's that much of a stretch to think that he would go to those lengths to save Christine. And Robbie, that's what's crazy is, I agree. This episode maybe even slightly did change my opinion on that Spider-Man trailer, even though it was unintentional. Just because if that is what he's capable of, and that's in there, if that's in him, maybe it's not that much of a stretch to say he could end up in sweatpants in a snowy sanctum. You know, I don't know. But it does teach you a little bit about the amount of emotional capacity he has, you know, to have these big swings.
It can't, it can't be pure coincidence that that trailer drops so shortly before this episode.
Right. And can I just note that
maybe it is.
This is the first time you and I have ever gotten early access to an episode mid-season, and there was a review embargo for it. Now, I know I'm being a little bit of Sherlock Holmes here, but you and I have not been able to figure out why that would be. Was it an accident that they sent it to us? Or was it that this episode was intentionally different? Or is it that this is the new tradition going forward, in which case I would love that.
Right.
It would make our lives really easy.
Oh, man.
But if this was a special episode to them, that they wanted to get it out to reviewers early, why? Because it's so different? Or is it because of the timing with Spider-Man? Like, there's something going on here. That's all I'm going to say. Something's happening.
For sure.
All right, y'all. Last week, by the way, I sound like Miss Minutes recently. What am I doing with the, hey, y'all? Last week, we got a chance to tell you about our friends at Panda Express. Have you guys out there tried the crispy almond chicken breast yet? Let's go. The crunchiness from their new signature rice puffed breading and the sliced almonds is out of this world, and the sauce is so stinking good. I have gotten a chance to personally do a taste test comparison of all the fried chicken entrees from Panda Express. And let me tell you, there's not a loser out there. You can get some honey sesame chicken breast, okay? You can get some crispy almond chicken breast. You can try the orange chicken. Like, right off the bat, you know the orange chicken with the signature sweet and tangy orange sauce, which, you know, that's my favorite. That hasn't changed. There's still a kick to it, though, Rob. It's so freaking good. It's Panda Express's best-selling entree. And did you know that they went through over 100 million pounds of it in 2020? Think about that.
Holy 100 cow.
Million pounds of orange chicken. But also, the honey sesame chicken breast is a fan favorite. And it's made with crispy strips of all white chicken meat raised without antibiotics, like we said last week. I personally love that one as well because it's got some fresh string green beans in there and some crisp yellow bell peppers. It's so good. So whether you're going to try crispy almond chicken breast or you're going to try orange chicken or you're going to try honey sesame chicken, they're all three amazing dishes that are so delicious, and it's the ultimate American Chinese comfort food made with quality ingredients. And on that note, we have one other dope announcement in the sweepstakes category. Robbie, this is becoming a sweepstakes episode. Let's go. So not only do you have a chance to win a $50 gift card from Cinemark, now you also have a chance to win something from Panda Express. Robbie, why don't you tell us about it?
Yes. Okay, so while the orange chicken is, you know, maybe the Infinity War or the Avengers Endgame of the Panda Express menu, you know, keep coming so back, true. Keeps hitting hard every time. We've got a new kid on the block here with the crispy almond chicken breast, like what we've been talking about. We've got a
This is maybe the Spider-Man No Way Home. Or this
there you go. There you go.
Yeah, okay.
So here's how the sweepstakes is going to work. Take a photo of yourself enjoying your Panda favorites with the crispy almond chicken breast as one entree selection and tag at the FFW podcast and official Panda Express on social media, whichever social media platform you're using. And be sure to use the hashtag crunch time
Crunch
to
time.
Enter to win a $20 gift card from Panda Express. We'll be announcing two winners on our September 20th episode, so be on the lookout for that. Remember, take your photo, tag us at the FFW Podcast, tag Panda Express at Official Panda Express, and use the hashtag Crunch Time. Kyle, let's go.
Let's go. You're stealing my tagline. Let's go. Okay.
I mean, it's Panda Express. So I feel like it's Kyle genre here.
I know. People have no idea that I'm literally eating there once a week. Okay. Anyways. Okay. Let's dive into the nitty gritty of this episode really briefly before we get to hear from Laura.
Yes. Yes.
A couple things I wanted to point out. For me, you know, I love Rachel McAdams, right? You know how much I love her. It was so fun to see Rachel on this again. I have always enjoyed that relationship, Christine and Steven. And like, I'm not the biggest fan of the Doctor Strange movie. You know that. It's in the middle of the pack for me. I think it's well done, but it's not like a top 10 for me.
Sure.
But I have really enjoyed Christine and Steven's relationship and Steven as a character. And so just kind of getting to go back to that realm and diving in, I thought was really fun. And I thought both Benedict Cumberbatch and Rachel McAdams did a good job kind of reigniting that chemistry for this personally.
Yeah, I thought so too. And it made me think, Kyle, do we know whether Rachel McAdams is set to return in Multiverse of Madness?
Yes. Yes. I am 96% sure she is in it. Yep.
Wow.
I think at one point there was maybe some debate that she wasn't, but I am super pumped because I think they confirmed she is, which, you know, like I said, I'm a big fan. So that's that's a huge win for me. But also, just as a side note, it's always a win when the MCU can bring back the same actors, just because I don't want that to ever get sloppy. I don't want it to be a situation where it's like, oh, we wish we could tell this story where she was involved, but we can't get Rachel. So bummer.
Well, and I feel like I've seen a lot of folks saying that, you know, she was kind of like, if she were just going to be a part of Doctor Strange's origin and then never be used again, that is sort of a criminal underutilization of an actor that's so much fun to watch. So I'm glad that she's sticking around. I do always wonder, I'd be really curious to see what it looks like for her to continue on. And we can talk about that once we get closer to that film. But I'm with you. I was so excited to even see her name show up in the credits at the beginning, which is kind of becoming a fun part of the show, is just seeing which names you see dropped there, to the extent they're not, you know, spoilers like Josh Brolin.
As a side note, she was so good for him when he was a jerk and that arrogant and narcissistic. She stood by his side and spoke truth into his life.
Right.
Okay. And I don't think that would be that crazy to keep her around in a relationship with Steven, just because we don't have that much of that in the MCU. In a weird way, actually them staying in a stable relationship would be a bold swing for the MCU. I know we have some of that, but I don't think that'd be that crazy.
That's
like
true.
A lot of other franchises, I think, are predicated on the romantic relationship. And you and I have talked a lot on this podcast about, for some reason, that has not been a massive factor in the MCU all the way up until like when Hawkeye was revealed to have a family. That was almost like controversial, right? Because it was like, wait, what?
Right.
And when they tried it with Nat and Bruce, there was some pushback. There hasn't been that many other than Tony and Pepper. I guess you could say Quill and Gamora, kinda, although they're not even like fully in a relationship at times.
Right.
Steve and Peggy, but that's really more that he missed out on a life with her than it is that it's like a long running relationship. And I know there's some more, so people are going to message me and be like, oh, WandaVision. I get it. If she was to reprise her role and just be by Steven's side helping, and she's not a superhero and almost more of a Mary Jane figure, that would be a fresh take, in my opinion.
Right. Well, that's what I was going to say. I kind of hope that that's what they do. Like, I think one thing that happens in the comics over time that I think is unfortunate is after decades and decades of dealing with these kind of supporting cast members, at some point, some writer is going to want to play with the idea of, oh, well, what if Mary Jane gets some kind of superpowers for a while? And, you know, because you just run out of fresh takes. And I hope that
that's what I don't want to have happen.
Yeah, exactly. Like, I think that the Jane Foster Thor thing is kind of a unique exception because that iteration of the character in the comics was so well loved and was such a kind of game changer for a while. But I think in general, I would like to see characters maintain the kind of normalcy, because I think you're right. Like, I think having that realism, even as the MCU, I mean, maybe especially as the MCU is getting crazier and crazier, because I think in some ways, and Shang-Chi, I think, did a pretty good job of this, especially with as wild as parts of that movie are, of kind of rooting it in as much of a real world frame of reference as possible. Because I think in a post-snap world, like, the MCU has never been more different than the kind of world outside our windows. And so I think it's important that they try to maintain the roots of that, like what they started with Iron Man, as much as they can, instead of just going like full comic booky with it and leaving the groundedness of that behind.
Another ground level thing, Robbie. What did you make of all the mythic beings, the monsters? First of all, was there more to that? Like, did you recognize any of those? I know it's a dumb question. Or was it just a, hey, I'm stealing power from them thing?
So the only one I recognized, I think, is just a what if internal Easter egg, because I do think that the tentacle monster seems to be the same one from the Captain Carter episode, right?
That's what I was wondering.
Yeah, I do
think
that's...
Is there more to that?
I mean, it could be, you know, there were questions around whether that monster in the first episode was Shea Goroth, like, being a Doctor Strange reference, and I think maybe this would confirm that. And maybe this, you know, could be foreshadowing into that creature being introduced into the live-action MCU at some point. But I think, to answer your question more broadly, it wasn't that I recognized any particular creature, but I will say this kind of felt the most like a Steve Ditko era Doctor Strange story that we've gotten because of how much it leaned into the kind of weird otherworldliness of it all. Like, the Doctor Strange movie was kind of trippy, but more in like a, oh, like you're on psychedelics thing, which is the joke that he makes in the movie. But this is more like, okay, we've got like actual weird monsters and creatures from beyond and the dark magic and all of this stuff that's a lot like more fantasy driven than anything that we've gotten from Doctor Strange in the MCU.
Right. I wonder if that's going to turn some people off or not, or if some people will love that. Another part that I'm curious how people react to is just, it seemed like in the first episode of What If, we got a very clear, here's where this one decision branched off into a new thing. It was Peggy taking the serum instead of Steve, and here's all the ramifications of it, right?
Right.
And I think in the second episode, it was somewhat clear too that it was like, what if T'Challa was the one that got abducted and not Peter Quill, and here's how that could have changed. I'm interested to see what people would say is the clear point of what went differently in this episode. Because, like, my wife was saying, well, the difference was his heart was the thing that he lost, not his hands. And I love that take. I love it. But what's interesting is, even before that, it was already different. Him and Christine had already made up and were very much in love. And she was in the car with him, which we had seen was not the case.
Right.
Do you see what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So what was the fundamental decision that changed that? Or is it just, and I'm fine with this, this is what I want, I'm fine with it just being a separate scenario altogether. And it doesn't have to be one decision that was different. Maybe, I guess you could say the one decision was that he fell in love with Christine like a year ago and treated her differently, I guess.
Yeah.
But we didn't see that. You know what I'm saying? You see what I'm, it's different.
No, totally. Yeah. I mean, I think, because it sets it up as what Annika said. I mean, that's what is explicitly told to us, but you're right in that that would require some other things to be kind of baked in.
Yeah, they're already different. And yeah.
One of the things that I was wondering initially was whether that was in fact the same night as Doctor Strange gets in the wreck in the movie, or if, you know, like in the movie, she has these references about like how they've gone to a million of those things, with how she's gone to all of these as his date, and they're always just about him, and like they talk about that in the kind of bantering way. So part of me wondered, and I don't think it tells us definitively whether that was the night from the movie or if that was like a previous night when they had gone to one of those. But I mean, I think the strange thing is how closely the crash site resembles the crash site from the movie.
I mean, I think you could explain it as it could be a different night, but I think they were trying to intentionally show you it's the same night. When I was watching this for the first time, I kept thinking to myself, dude, don't take the same route. Like, don't go the same way. Then the second time, okay, after we know he still loses her, he still takes the same route and tries to pass the truck. I'm like, just go slow. Don't go behind right. The truck, guy.
Right.
Like, you don't have to pass him. But then I obviously watched more of the episode and realized it was inevitable either way. So that made more sense. But
yeah, it is funny how this episode, without being much longer than any normal What If episode, has all these little, there are phases to it. Like, you know, like this is the Groundhog Day phase of this episode.
Yeah.
You know, where it's just like clips of all the different ways he's trying to avoid the inevitable and can't.
But I thought they portrayed that downward spiral so well.
For sure.
Personally.
For sure. I think that culminates in what I wanted to talk about before we forget, though, which is that scene with the Ancient One, which again, happy to see Tilda Swinton return, and what kind of becomes of that we don't know at the time, but find out at the end, because that's one of the crazier things about this episode to me. And something that like, I would love to talk to AC Bradley about this now that we've seen it, because I saw she's credited as the writer of this one, and you could see a world in which you have the same story, the same cautionary tale, without the splitting of Stephen Strange element.
Okay.
But that added such an interesting wrinkle that I liked a lot. Like, and it showed us a lot about the kind of theory of the multiverse, I guess, but also like the fact that she talks about splitting off two versions of him within one reality, and how that's, you know, requires some level of dark magic and is dangerous, obviously, because of what happens. But that was kind of a twist at the end that I did not expect at all, and that I thought, as kind of weird and wild as it was, worked pretty well for me.
Yeah, and I think it was cool for me to see just the two totally different personality Doctor Stranges.
Yes.
Like the one who was emotionally able to get over it, move on, still sad, but then how powerful and good he could become, like the one we've seen, and yet
right.
How bad it could also get and how powerful that could get. Somewhere in there, by the way, I did predict and call to my wife. I said, I think what's going to happen is he's going to get so much power and he will bring Christine back, but she won't even recognize him. It'll be like a beast that she won't even want to be with.
Wow.
You know? Yeah.
Look at you.
So I did call it, but I thought that was a horrifyingly sad but amazing ending to the episode, that uh-huh. He actually beats the good Doctor Strange. Like, that was the last twist for me. Okay, the first twist was that he was going to run it back over and over again like Groundhog's Day, and that he wouldn't be able to change uh-huh. It. That was a twist. But then the fact that she split him in half was a second twist. But then the biggest twist to me was that, oh my gosh, they are going to go down the route of the bad guy wins, beats the good guy, despite him saying, don't do that, and then just feels regret about his decision, interacts with the Watcher, and can't do anything about it. And it just ends with him hopeless. That's, I mean, what? Like, we usually end with some nugget of like, if he's repentant enough or something, he could get out of this little prison or something. But no, that's the end of the tale. Like, if you're not careful, revenge, greed, grief, hate can take over, and there's no way back sometimes.
Well, and that's, I totally agree. That's what I thought made that added wrinkle so effective, is it reminded me, I mean, because we keep circling back to this, of the scene with Thor at the end of Infinity War throwing the axe into Thanos. Is it's that there's that moment at the end where you're like, okay, this is where good Doctor Strange wins. Like, this is when
right.
we get the happy ending. And then you're right. It like, that's the final shock of, no, he's straight up losing. And then it all, like, the whole reality crumbles. Whereas I think without that, you would kind of have this sense of impending doom without that bit of hope, just, you know, for that hope to be crushed, to paraphrase Ultron. But I think, it was so bold on a storytelling level. And what AC said in our interview, which, by the way, if you're hearing us reference this and haven't listened to our last episode, please go back
and
check that out, especially the interview with AC Bradley.
Yep.
But yeah, I mean, she talked about how season two gets even weirder. And this episode made me super excited for what she could mean by that.
One last thing, and then we'll get to our conversation with Laura, I promise. Isn't it just funny overall how much time you and I have spent, even in the last week alone, talking about Doctor Strange? And just zoom out for a second. Like, I wonder if when we were watching Doctor Strange, the film, we ever thought that he would have this kind of impact going forward. And I remember when we covered that movie, you had kind of brought up that Doctor Strange is a really unique character in the comics. And we had asked so many questions about, like, okay, now there's all this multiverse stuff and mirror dimension. How does that work with Falcon or Tony Stark? Like, right. How does that work? And yet, fast forward a few years, and here we are. And it's not only that it works, it's like a ton of the MCU at this point.
Yeah.
And it's just kind of crazy.
That's a great point.
That's all I'm saying. Like, we have a Doctor Strange What If episode. Doctor Strange is making a massive appearance in our favorite Spider-Man movie. And he has like maybe the most anticipated film next year coming up that he is going to helm with Sam Raimi in Doctor Strange 2. And then here's the biggest thing. It's not even just that Doctor Strange has become so accessible to the MCU. It's also that everything Doctor Strange stands for is the new era. The wizardry and the magic and the multiverse and the time travel is becoming so normal to us now, when 5 years ago, we would have been like, whoa, that is out there.
Yeah, that's so true, which is correct. I mean, it's funny because I've said this before. You and I, without articulating it exactly like this, have said that we kind of wanted this, like, ground level political side of things. But then also, I think we had said that we wanted to see the Doctor Strangeness of it all be explored. And I think I'm really encouraged that Marvel seems to be wanting to hold both in parallel. And I mean, obviously there's going to be stuff beyond that. There'll be Guardians and Thor as well. But I do like that Falcon Winter Soldier exists, and that, you know, Hawkeye and Black Widow, like the things that we're getting, the little bit of things we're getting that's going to show the kind of ground levelness of it all continuing, is there to kind of contrast all this. But yeah, I mean, you're right. Like, they're, especially at this moment, kind of, again, with the No Way Home trailer and all of that kind of fresh in our minds, it seems like they're going hard into the mystical side, which is not something I would have predicted in 2016.
Yeah, and personally, one of my favorite things to watch is when those ground level people are forced to interact with the Doctor Strange level people. I love that.
Right.
That's why I think I was such a big fan of that conversation between Tony and Steven. Right?
Right.
But
right.
I think it'd even be fun to watch. That's what's happening in Spider-Man, is we're getting to watch the ultimate ground level person, Spider-Man,
interact
on a galactic level. And what in the world does that mean? And I've enjoyed that. I've always enjoyed that. I've enjoyed Peter going to space. I know some people, Spider-Man people out there, but you know what I'm saying? That's been a fun thing for me, watching them being forced to interact. Listeners, if you are looking into making a website, Squarespace is the way to do it. We've been doing the Squarespace Community Question of the Week, which we absolutely love because we love our Squarespace website that much. They have an all-in-one setup, domains, websites, online stores, marketing tools, analytics, all tools to make your job of growing your business as easy as it can be. Let Squarespace help you by building your website using their platform. So right now, head over to squarespace.com and use the promo code FRIENDSFROMWORK. So squarespace.com/FRIENDSFROMWORK for a free trial. And if you like it, which you will, and you're ready to launch, use the offer code FRIENDSFROMWORK to save 10% off your first purchase of a website or domain. Again, squarespace.com/FRIENDSFROMWORK, and you can save 10% off your first purchase of your website or domain. Trust me, if you're looking into starting a business, you need a website presence. And if you're going to build a website, use Squarespace. All right, guys, I think you're really going to enjoy this conversation that we had with Laura Karpman. She is a world-renowned composer who has done a ton of stuff, but specifically some theater stuff, which is really interesting. And some of her performances have even premiered at Carnegie Hall and stuff like that. So kind of a different vibe, which is fun. And I love that you and I have kind of gotten the chance to become the composer of the MCU podcast, kind of, which is fun.
I love it.
And so anytime we get a chance to talk to another composer, it's a huge win for us and for you guys out there. So without further ado, here was our really fun conversation with Laura Karpman. Okay, everyone, today's special guest is the incredible, the talented Laura Karpman. Laura, welcome to Friends from Work.
I like the way that you say my name. It's like a sporting event. You know, yeah. Laura Karpman coming on.
Let's go.
I love it.
The place goes wild.
Awesome. Absolutely.
So we have enjoyed immensely what you've been doing with What If thus far.
Oh, thanks.
Obviously, it's a very different kind of project, right? Because each episode's kind of got its own tone, its own scope, and very different in genre. So when you get a pitch like this, how do you even begin?
You say yes.
Yeah, you're going to do it.
You say, yeah, let's go. You know, the fortunate thing is I've been doing this a while and I've worked in a multiple of genres. So, you know, when someone says war, you know, 40s war movie, I know what that sounds like. Someone says heist, I know what that sounds like. You know, someone says tragic love story, I want to write something new for that. Someone says, you know, murder mystery, I want to do something new for that. So it's just fun. It's challenging, but in the best possible way.
So does each episode force you to kind of start from scratch then thematically?
Yes, to a certain extent. I mean, I think there are continuities in the, you know, in that the Watcher theme really weaves into every episode and, you know, weaves in on top of other themes and works its way in. But yes, it is sort of starting from scratch. And in that way, it is different from working on other shows. There's, you know, even Lovecraft Country, which was, you know, genre based as well. Every episode sort of played with different genres. There were themes that more tied it together, but the one thing that we have to tie this together is the Watchers theme, as well as of course all the stuff that we pull from the MCU.
Which I love you brought that up, because that's what I was going to ask about second. You're obviously balancing coming up with your own score, your own pieces of music, with bringing in themes like the Guardians of the Galaxy theme when T'Challa does something, or like even in the Doctor Strange episode, I hear hints of the harpsichord or whatever kind of playing off Giacchino's thing.
Right.
What is that like, finding that balance for you?
I think, you know, every time it's about asking, what do we need to do? So for example, in the Doctor Strange episode, it didn't really pull from any of Michael's music, but the harpsichord is such a strong choice for Doctor Strange that the minute you use the harpsichord, you could be playing a Bach invention. You say, oh yeah, Doctor Strange. You know what I mean? It's such a strange and unusual. It's such an effective and brilliant choice for that.
Pun intended.
It's pun intended, and it's the instrument has so much character that it immediately takes you to that. I think that for episode 101, it was really about taking, you know, the great Alan Silvestri theme for Captain America and literally inverting it or doing a mirror image of it for the Captain America theme. So how does how does what we know become something different? And how it's like I said, it's a mirror image. It's really what goes up, what goes down in the Peggy stuff. And in the second episode, it's about taking these kind of, I would say almost musical spices from Black Panther score and adding Guardian of the Galaxy on top of that and creating a different mashup. But as well as that, there's a ton of new music and, all the heist stuff, which is like, so you've got, basically three movies. You've got a heist movie, you've got Guardians of the Galaxy, and you've got Wakanda. So, all of these things kind of weaving in together.
Even using those Wakanda, when the ship shows up, love that stuff.
Yeah. That's literally saying, okay, let's get the stems from Ludwig's score and then writing new stuff on top of it.
Love that. Because that's what I was going to ask. How does that actual process work? Yeah. If you're getting sometimes you're getting the stems, I'm sure. Other times, like you're saying with Giacchino, it's just bringing up an instrument and you are already associate. Okay. Dr.
And
Strange.
Other times it's taking a theme and completely recontextualizing it, reharmonizing it and re-recording it, which is what it is mostly.
Well, one theme I was particular fan of, now I've only seen it one time, but just the Doctor Strange episode, the score in that episode, it was so tragic, had a haunting tone to it, but kind of almost a fulfilled feeling too, almost. Just take me through the nitty-gritty of that episode in particular.
That's really interesting that you bring that up, because what that is, in concert music, we call it almost a passacaglia, which is a repeated figure that goes and goes and goes. And I think that when I'm looking to score stuff, I want to come up with a conceptual idea for the score that really matches what's happening in the action. So in that particular episode, it's really about living life over and over again and trying to make a change, but being trapped. And so this idea of taking, in that case it was a da da dee, like these kind of four piano chords, and then it grows and it grows and it grows, and then at the very end it becomes small again. So just taking this idea of how do you repeat something, change it as you're repeating it over and over again, grow it, make it dramatic, make it tragic, and then come down to nothingness again, which is, I think, mirrors what goes on in the episode.
That's so beautiful. I love that. I don't think I caught that the first time, but that's a great way. Wow.
Yeah. It's every time you sit down with something like this, you want to come up with, okay, what's the idea? What's going to be the thing that's going to drive this particular episode? And I think in certain cases, like in 102, it was a number of things. It was paying tribute to Chadwick. It was, combining the two scores. It was writing the heist thing. And as I said, in 101, it was really, what happens when it's Captain Carter? What does this mean? How is it different? How is it the same? And so you're really trying, is it totally different? No, it's not. In some ways it's the same movie, but with a different lead, And so you don't want to do something completely new. You want to do something that emanates from the great theme that Alan Silvestri wrote, but yet feels different because she's different. Feminist embodiment of what Captain America is, and she, it's great that a chick did it. Now it's really empowering to work on that as a woman. But anyway, it's so every episode you got to kind of look at it and say, okay, what are we doing? What are we pulling from? What are we ignoring? What's new? What's old? What are we doing?
You brought up episode 2 and that Chadwick T'Challa thing towards the end. I would imagine that changed after his passing. Is that correct? Because it's very somber in tone.
Yeah, no, we did it after we knew he died when we did it.
That's a beautiful
work
of art there. Yeah, love it. Okay, last question. Anything in particular you're excited for fans to hear coming up? Something you're looking forward to?
Zombie music.
Zombie? Oh, I don't even know what zombie music sounds like.
Scary.
Yeah. I love it.
Yeah.
Well, we are huge fans. We hope you continue to blow our minds with it. So we're really excited.
Thanks. I'm so glad you like the show.
I am very much enjoying it. Thank you so much for your time, and we'll talk to you down the road. Thank you.
My pleasure. Okay. Take care.
Man, that was so gracious of her to spend time with us. I can't personally wait to see what she does with the rest of the What If episodes. I think it's going to be really fun.
Yeah, totally agree, especially after this one.
Guys, thanks so much for listening. This has been a whirlwind of the last 2 weeks for Robbie and I, but we're making it through and we're having so much fun doing it. And that's largely due to you guys listening and being so supportive. So thank you so much.
So as always, you can find us online, like Kyle said, at our website, theffwpodcast.com, or on social media at theffwpodcast. Also, if you're looking to support the podcast, please do consider checking out our partners that we've talked about this episode. These folks are folks we're choosing to work with because we believe in what they're doing. And so it always helps us out and helps them out if you follow up on some of these things.
Right. And don't forget about the giveaways from Cinemark and Panda.
Yes.
Double win.
Man. Then Thursday, we are going to be finally fully breaking down Shang-Chi.
Yes.
We're really excited because there's some stuff that we have been holding in with all our might.
It feels like it's been 84 years. Cue the Titanic lady meme.
So we will see you right back here Thursday to discuss Shang-Chi and Legend of the Ten Rings on Friends from Work.
This season, a new hot deal has arrived at Metro. $25 a line for 4 lines with all the data you need and 4 free Samsung Galaxy A15 5G phones. Getting Metro's best deals is easy. No ID required, no activation fees. Get a new number or keep your own. It's up to you. That's 4 lines for $25 a line plus 4 free phones. Visit a store or go online today. Only at Metro by T-Mobile.
When you join Metro Plus Tax, for a limited time and subject to change. Max 1 offer per account.
Live on DAZN Worldwide, May 2nd and 3rd, Garcia versus Romero and Canelo versus Skull, Friday from 6 p.m. Eastern. Garcia returns in a history-making Times Square takeover. 24 hours later, Saturday from 7 p.m. Eastern, King Canelo faces undefeated Skull for the undisputed crown. May 2nd and 3rd, a knockout weekend of boxing. Pick one or go all in for only $90, exclusively on DAZN. Buy now at DAZN.com/boxing.